Hey folks, you got to tune to 93.9 WLXU Lexington Community Radio, and this is the Green Waves Radio Program, a project of Bluegrass Green Source. Today in the studio, we have very happy to have Roscoe Clausing and Dan Stever, both with the Clausing Group, a commercial landscape and green infrastructure group here in Lexington, and we're going to be talking about today their business, as well as sort of best practices, what sustainability means in landscape design, all of that. So stick around for that conversation. Before we get into our conversation with Roscoe and Dan, we have a couple of news stories to let you know about this week. All three of our stories this week came from the Lexington Herald Leader. This first story, the future appears uncertain for a hazard plant that would burn biomass to make electricity because of a court ruling striking down its contract to sell power to a utility. A state court of appeals panel ruled 3-0 that there was no evidence that rate increases Kentucky Power requested as part of the deal were fair, just, or reasonable as required by law. The decision cited testimony that the contract with Eco Power Generation, LLC, would mean an increase in the average residential bill of a Kentucky Power customer of up to 7% the first year, or about an extra $100, and an increase of up to 13% in later years. The court said there was no evidence the higher rates would result in an economic benefit to customers or the region. To the contrary, there was evidence that the deal would strip away more jobs and money from the tax base in the region than it would add, because people paying more for electricity would have less money for other things, the appeals panel said. The appeals court ordered the case sent back to the State Public Service Commission for a decision denying Kentucky Power's request to have customers pay to buy electricity produced by Eco Power Generation. Kentucky Power has about 170,000 customers in 20 eastern Kentucky counties. Allison Barker, spokeswoman for the utility, said Tuesday that it was disappointed in the decision. Kentucky Power could appeal, as could the Public Service Commission. Gary T. Crawford, Eco Power Generation's chief executive officer, said the company was disappointed by the decision but remains committed to the project. Quote, "Eastern Kentucky desperately needs jobs, and our hazard project would create over $80 million in new payrolls during construction alone, while permanently creating several hundred jobs in the region," end quote, as well as serve as a sustainable energy source. The Public Service Commission said the job would create 230 temporary construction jobs, then 30 permanent jobs at the plant, and 225 jobs in the logging and trucking industries. Crawford said he did not know about the potential for the company to develop customers other than Kentucky Power. Richard A. Sturgill, whose business interests include timber and coal, formed Eco Power Generation in 2009 to develop the plant. The company says the plant would burn low-quality logs, waste limbs, wood chips, and sawdust to make enough electricity for 30,000 homes. It would be the only plant of its kind in Kentucky. The legislature passed a bill in 2013 to benefit Eco Power Generation. It required the Public Service Commission to consider not just whether the plant would be the cheapest source of power for a utility, but also factors such as jobs it would create. The power would be relatively expensive, but the utility cited benefits such as diversifying its electricity sources. The Public Service Commission approved letting Kentucky Power recover the cost of $1.26 billion worth of electricity from the plant over 20 years. An association of large electricity users sued, leading to the Court of Appeals decision. The decision said the price for Eco Power Generation's price to Kentucky Power was high, even for renewable energy, that the utility did not analyze whether the price of the electricity would be economical, and that there was no evidence the utility needed the power. The court said the deal would create a handful of jobs, but subject nearly every household and business in 20 counties to a sizable rate increase for 20 years. Our second story today, an update on a still developing story that we've shared before. Estill County Judge Executive Wallace Taylor was critical Tuesday of the state's conduct in regard to illegal dumping of out-of-state radioactive waste at an Estill County landfill. In an address to the Interim Joint Committee on Natural Resources and Environment, Taylor said he is irritated by the, quote, "lack of communication from the state government to local government," end quote. Taylor said the county wants more information that the state has collected about the dumping of nearly 2,000 tons of low-level radioactive waste generated by drilling in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. The waste was the byproduct from fracking, a drilling technique that has been used to extract natural gas from underground in the Northeast. I would ask for more information, Taylor said. I want to be able to give it to my people that I represent every day. Kentucky regulators were notified in July 2015 that West Virginia had approved a plan for radioactive waste to be dumped in Estill County, but officials there didn't learn about the dumping until February. That month, Kentucky regulators put landfills on notice that radioactive shipments could be headed their way, but state officials never called Taylor or the local health department about the matter, said Thomas Hart, a member of Concerned Citizens of Estill County, a new group that is raising awareness about the waste. Did state officials not think this might be of interest to the citizens of Estill County? Hart said in a separate address to legislators. Taylor said he learned about the dumping from a television reporter, yet, quote, the state had known about it for weeks, months. That is unfair to my people, end quote. State Attorney General Andy Beshear announced last week that no criminal charges will be filed in regard to the dumping, but the State Cabinet for Health and Family Services said it will seek penalties against several companies for the illicit dumping. In addition, Estill County Fiscal Court filed a civil suit last week against the company that operates the landfill and others for alleged violations of the host agreement with the county. The state withheld some information because a criminal investigation was underway. But now that the criminal investigation has ended, a summary of that information should be released, Hart said. Taylor said the county is investigating the possibility of pursuing criminal charges. He said later that no evidence has been presented to a local grand jury. In our last story this week, the nation's coal mines were in compliance on nearly all dust samples taken this year with new monitors aimed at cutting miners' exposure to particles that can cause deadly black lung disease, federal regulators announced Monday. The coal industry had challenged the new dust control rule, arguing, among other things, that the monitors had a high failure rate. However, Joseph A. Main, head of the U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration, said Monday the sampling results show the monitors and the rule work to protect miners. The latest phase of the tougher dust control rules in coal mines took effect February 1st. It required companies to begin using continuous personal dust monitors on miners in the dustiest jobs and to conduct more sampling. The monitors give miners and supervisors real-time information about dust levels so they can make adjustments to lower exposure to dust, Maine said. Under the old rules, it could take days or weeks for test results to show the concentration of dust miners had worked in. MSHA announced Monday that it had analyzed more than 20,000 dust samples collected by the personal monitors in underground coal mines from April 1st to June 30, and about 99% complied with exposure limits. In addition, MSHA said more than 98% of the samples would have been in compliance with a new standard set to take effect August 1st, when the permissible exposure level of breathable dust for a miner will drop from 2 milligrams per cubic meter of air to 1.5 milligrams. The results show the industry can meet the lower limit, Maine said. MSHA began phasing in new standards in 2014 to cut coal miners' exposure to dust churned up during mining. The dust can cause black lung, an incurable disease that impairs breathing and causes premature death. The disease has been the primary or contributing cause of death for more than 76,000 miners since 1968, according to the agency. The prevalence of black lung dropped markedly after Congress approved rules in 1969 to limit miners' exposure to dust, but began increasing in the late 1990s. Eastern Kentucky has been a hotspot for the resurgence. In one round of screening from 2005 through 2009, 9% of Eastern Kentucky miners screened had the disease. Maine said one problem is that the old dust control rules were not adequate. Miners have also said coal companies sometimes failed to comply with the rules, tampering with the samples to make it appear miners' mines were not as dusty as they really were. In announcing the test results Monday, Maine credited the efforts of the coal industry and MSHA to clean up the air in coal mines and implement the dust rules to protect miners. Those are a couple of green stories for you guys to know about this week. And now we're joined in the studio by our guests. I'm very excited to have with us today Roscoe Clausing, CEO of Clausing Group, and Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach, also with the Clausing Group. Welcome, guys.
Good morning, Chris.
Great to have you guys both in the studio. Well, let's just start with the basics. For folks that don't know who the Clausing Group is, can you tell us a little bit about who you all are?
Sure, I'll take that one. So we're a landscape contractor. We work in central Kentucky and also in the greater Louisville area. We've been in business since 1992, and we've got kind of the classic landscaper story. My younger brother, Brooke Clausing, and I founded the company when we were in high school. I was 15, he was 13, and our parents said, no car for you.
The great motivator.
That's right. That's right. It was all about a car. So I got my early 1980s Volkswagen Jetta that I ended up using to carry around grass clippings. Nice. And my brother got his Toyota 4Runner, and it all kind of has gone from there.
Wow. So it got started, you said you and your brother Brooke started out, and you guys were just doing basic lawn care services for residential, or?
Yeah, that's right. Literally walking up and down the street with our lawnmower, right. Mowing Miss Jones's yard or Mr. Smith's yard, or the business person who was out of town all the time and didn't have the time to take care of their place. So we were just mowing grass.
But now you guys, I mean, Causing Group now is, I see you guys' trucks all over town here in Lexington. And so how did the growth, what was the sort of trajectory? What's the story behind how the business became from two brothers to the Causing Group as it is now?
Gotcha. So long story short, our father studied horticulture at the University of Kentucky. He was a landscape supervisor for the city of Lexington for about 25 years. And as customers started asking us, hey, while you're here, can you go ahead and prune this tree? Mm. Can you take care of these shrubs for us? Mm. Maybe install a few perennials. We always turned to him and said, listen, can you instruct us on the appropriate technique, procedures for doing this right? And so eventually our scope of services expanded. In about 1998, we made a strategic decision to move the work we were doing from almost all residential sales to all business-to-business sales, wow. And that's what we've done ever since.
And by business-to-business, you mean commercial facility, larger plots of land or larger footprint?
That's right. We won't mow your yard, Chris.
Right.
Yeah, we tend to work with larger organizations, manufacturing facilities, campuses, right. Municipalities,
great
office parks, this kind of thing.
Just in Lexington, or I know you've recently moved to Louisville, but do you work sort of the surrounding counties as well, or?
We do. We have a bit of business in the surrounding counties. I'd say that from one of our offices, we tend to travel about 30 minutes in any direction. So, yes, we serve all of the greater Lexington area and all of the greater Louisville area from an office in Louisville.
Great. And so what you sort of touched on some of the range of services that Causing Group does provide. Can you sort of help us? Can you expand on that a little bit and let us know sort of what is the full range of services?
We work from mowing grass, which is what most people think about with the edging, right. And the blowing and everything. And we'll prune your shrubs and your trees, but we also manage the health care of the plants. We look at more than just, is your grass green? We understand what's happening in the soil. And so a lot of times someone will see something visually wrong with the plant and you can put a Band-Aid on it, or you can address what the cause is, mm-hmm. instead of treating the symptom. And so we tend to look a little bit deeper, mm-hmm. and go and treat the cause of what might be wrong with the plant, or even managing a little bit of the hydrology so that you have better drainage on a property. Mm. But we also do things like, speaking of hydrology, install rain gardens.
Right, right.
We do full landscape design and installation as well. We have not just a maintenance division in our company, we also have a construction division. Wow. And with that, we try to focus on green infrastructure projects. Uh-huh. And for those that might not know, green infrastructure is basically using Mother Nature to purify our water, provide habitat for things like monarch butterflies, which are in a really tough situation right now, right. population-wise.
Right.
So that's sort of what we focus on.
Wow. Let's just take a little quick break here. It's a good spot to take a break. If you're just now tuning in, you've got it at 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio, and this is the Green Waves Radio program. If you're just tuning in, we are talking today with Roscoe Clausing and Dan Stever, both with the Clausing Group, sort of leaders in sustainable landscaping design and implementation here in Lexington and Louisville. When we come back, we're going to get back into our conversation with Roscoe and Dan, so keep it right here.
Bystander intervention is a superpower. We all have the power to create a culture of safety and well-being by putting green dots on our community map.
A green dot
is a moment of safety.
A green dot
is the moment a bystander uses his or her words, actions, or behaviors to diffuse tension and stop an act of violence.
A green dot
is making sure everyone gets home from the bar safely or checking in on someone you're concerned about with a text.
A green dot
is telling a friend about a challenging situation and solving it together, or having a conversation with loved ones about the importance of looking out for one another.
A green dot
is liking Green Dot Lexington's Facebook page and learning more on ways you can create a safer, more compassionate Lexington. What's your green dot?
Baby, you're listening to WLXU. LPFM, Lexington.
And we're back. You've got a tune to 93.9 WLXU Lexington Community Radio. And today on the Green Waves radio program, we are talking to Roscoe Clausing, CEO of Clausing Group, and Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach. Before the break, we were just kind of talking a little bit about how Clausing Group got started and the sort of range of services that are provided by Clausing Group. I want to go back just to one thing that we were talking about before, Roscoe. You said at one point you made the decision to shift from primarily residential to strictly commercial or municipal business-to-business customers. What was sort of the rationale behind that decision?
For the sake of this show, I wish I could tell you it was all about saving the world, but it wasn't.
You could say that.
it was about looking for a viable business model. Right. Everybody knows the landscape industry is a seasonal industry. We're looking to always improve the professionalism of the industry. And it's really, really tough to do when you can only employ people for 8 months of the year.
Right.
So one of the unique things about the commercial side of the landscape industry is that the scope of services expands a little bit, the schedule of delivery expands a little bit, and then you can also get into snow removal, snow management services, and ultimately that gives us the ability to employ our field leadership, our foremen, year-round.
Right.
Instead of having to lay folks off. And we felt like that was going to be a really critical piece of the sustainability of the company.
Right.
Long-term.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you've got good people and you have to let them go after 8 months, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's tough to develop somebody to invest in their training, in their growth, and then kind of roll the dice and say, hey, Chris, right, are you going to be available in 4 months to come back?
How many, so when you started out, it was you and your brother, Brooke. By the time that you guys made the shift to focusing on business to business, was it still just the two of you, or had you been sort of, I'm assuming you must have had other folks working for you to come to the realization that you needed to shift the business model a little bit to make it better?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So our first employee, I got to give a shout out to Matt Ransdell. Our next door neighbor, met Matt when he was 10. He was probably 15 when he started helping me and Brooke. Right. Jake Royce was our second employee. I think there were probably about 10 of us when we decided to make this shift.
Right.
It was a big change.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yes, we realized we got to be able to employ people year round.
And so, just from a higher level, like, what is the difference in approach to a commercial facility versus a residential? Is it scale? Is there something bigger at stake?
There is an economy of scale aspect to this, but it's also a matter of, I guess, competition.
Right.
Landscaping is one of the easiest businesses to get into. You need a truck and a mower, right?
Right.
So working with businesses is a unique challenge because you're helping that business achieve their organizational goals. So we have to meet standards of insurance. We have to meet standards of certification on our own side.
Right.
And it also, we have to do compliance with those corporations, and not everybody can meet those regulatory standards.
Right.
One of the things we use is E-Verify, You know, it's very difficult in this, in any industry to get labor.
Right.
And E-Verify makes it that much more difficult in the landscaping world.
Right. And you talk about certifications as well. It's also from, I guess I'm imagining the customer standpoint, knowing that if I come to Clausing Group and you guys are certified to do a certain kind of sustainable landscape design, if I'm a, you know, multinational or a corporation that has a footprint that's bigger than just Lexington or bigger than just Kentucky, and my corporation headquarters have a commitment to sustainability and they've said that they want, you know, a triple bottom line or whatever their sort of vehicle is, that needing people who actually understand what that is and how to meet those requirements is really important. And so is that something that you guys have always done as an organization, or how did?
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
absolutely not. This is something that is relatively new. You know, companies didn't make a big deal of their sustainability initiatives 20 years ago.
Right.
They didn't have directors that were focused on reducing their carbon footprint or engaging their employees in the community in the way that they do today through massive tree planting projects or cleanup projects. It just wasn't nearly as prevalent. And right. So this we see has been a big opportunity for us. And one of the reasons that we like doing business to business work, and very simply put, it's partly a matter of personality and choice.
Right.
Companies that serve the consumer directly have to interact a bit differently. The consumer has different wants, different needs, and myself, our staff, we just tend to fit a bit better in the business to business world.
It's interesting to bring up the consumer and sort of what the consumer expects, what that drives a business to do. Do you feel like this growth in sort of corporate sustainability awareness and commitments, do you feel like that's something that has come because consumers have demanded that of businesses more? Or do you feel like businesses are just sort of coming to this on their own? Or how do you feel like that sort of market and interest has developed over the...
It's a really recent development, and corporations are just like people. They each have their own personality depending right. who's running them right. And you have some homeowners that are very interested in sustainability. Likewise, you have some corporations that are very interested in sustainability. So some ask for more. We have several clients who ask us to participate in their corporate sustainability initiative reporting, and so we get to give them, you know, how many trees did you plant right. this year? And we'll go to the tree benefit calculator online. If nobody's used that, Google it, the tree benefit calculator.
It's very cool.
Yeah, it's a great tool. And so we can bring that information to our clients and let them know in hard numbers what they are doing to contribute to the improvement of the environment and the community. Because
right.
also, you know, there's studies out there that show you plant X number of trees per square mile, you reduce asthma rates by X amount percent.
Right.
So there's a lot of really fun things happening right now in the ability to actually measure the benefits and hard numbers that the landscape provides, which wasn't always the case.
Right. I think that's such an interesting development. Fairly recently, you guys expanded into the Louisville market. I think that's really cool. So first, I want to say congratulations. You don't hear often about smaller market businesses expanding into larger markets. Or maybe it's just a Lexington chip on my shoulder. could be a bit of both. I'm curious what led you to move into a completely new market and what the sort of learning curve from an organizational and operational standpoint has been.
Well, it wasn't our plan to go to Louisville at first. We have strategic planning that we do as part of our company on a regular basis, and we knew we wanted to expand to a new market because essentially growth is opportunity.
Right.
And, you know, it falls in line with trying to have year-round work for our people. If we're not growing, they can't move up. So
right.
That's part of why we expanded, is to provide opportunity. But we were looking at Northern Kentucky, and then we had a great opportunity to show up in the Louisville area, and we jumped on it
right.
because we were prepared. But you're never as prepared as you think you are.
Right. Right.
So there was a steep learning curve, And I have to say, you know, our branch manager in the Louisville area, Luke Tedder, has been instrumental to us having success out there. He's done a wonderful job for us. Not that other people haven't,
right.
But just a special shout out to him.
That's great.
And any challenge that you face in your personal life helps you develop as an individual, right? Helps you determine your purpose. And our company is the same way. You know, we're able to become more efficient. We're able to create a better understanding of our own identity and our own purpose as a company on how we want to affect our community and the environment.
That's awesome. I think it's so interesting that you all, part of the rationale behind expanding was, how do we keep and retain the talent, the people that we have that are good people? Like, how do we keep giving them opportunities? I think so many times businesses, nonprofits, et cetera, they hit a wall and they just see that wall as reality instead of thinking how they can get beyond it. And so that's just, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So Chris, 10 people or so, when we decide we're going to become Clausen Group,
right,
and focus on commercial work. Well, that's great if it's 10 foremen, but eventually it becomes 10 managers.
Right.
And if you're really focused on the opportunities that you create for your staff and your team, the managers have to have opportunities. And now you start looking for senior management and executives in your company. And so, and we've got about 65, 70 employees right now. And
wow.
At some point, we have to look beyond looking for more foremen. And create opportunities for everybody. And so, again, it was just kind of a natural extension of the way the company has gone.
Wow, that's just phenomenal. I think this time of year, right, so folks in Lexington, we all see, we're very familiar with the site of, as you were saying, Dan, it's landscaping is one of the easiest things to get into. This time of year, we see everything from people in small cars like a Honda with a lawnmower strapped to the back to pickup trucks to more professional trucks like the ones that you all have. And I think it's seeing landscape crews traveling around, it's like almost an afterthought. It's just such an everyday thing that you see during the spring and the summer and the fall. And I think one thing that sets you all apart, and obviously one of the reasons that I wanted to have you all in the studio, was that you'll have a real dedication to sustainability, both, I think, internally as well as externally. And so I'm curious, what does sustainability mean to the Clausen Group, and what does it look like in practice?
Well, sustainability, the first thing you need to understand about sustainability is just not environmental. You mentioned the triple bottom line.
Right.
You know, so you have social responsibility, economic responsibility, and environmental responsibility. And if you're not addressing all three of those at the same time, you're not actually sustainable. And so our business model is completely based off of that, and especially the notion that curb appeal is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Ecosystem services is a concept that we try to incorporate in the landscaping that we do. And ecosystem services is pretty technical.
Yeah.
Basically, it's all the stuff Mother Nature does for free.
Right.
So photosynthesis, food, water purification, air purification, all that sort of stuff. And our basic landscapes are not sustainable. Just putting in a tree, it's better than not having a tree.
Right.
But you can put in a better tree.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You know,
right.
Was it Doug Tallamy?
It is, yeah.
Doug Tallamy did a pretty neat little quick research where he went to a ginkgo tree and an oak tree. And the number of caterpillars he found on the oak tree, it was like over 300 different types of caterpillars, and he had one type of caterpillar on the ginkgo tree.
Wow.
So obviously one is providing more services than the other.
Right, right.
Although they're both pretty trees, right?
Right, right. So And
let me take that just a step further. So the service, of course, is that far more animals can live off of the caterpillars that are living off of the oak tree,
right,
as opposed to maybe one species or two species of bird that would choose to eat the single caterpillar species that's on the ginkgo.
Right. And that's just one, that sort of habitat aspect is just one part of that, one little slice of...
It's the web of life.
Yeah.
You know, it all builds. And, you know, we get concerned on the landscape side with soils and hydrology and insects because that's the base of this web of life that we have.
Right.
And people used to talk about the food chain, how it's one that leads to another, but the web is a much better way to look at it because everything is interconnected.
Right.
And we look at these small things because they influence the big things.
Right. That's great. That's wonderful. Let's just take a quick pause here, folks. We're going to take a quick break, do some PSAs and announcements. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Roscoe Clausing, CEO of Clausing Group, and Dan Stever, director of Employee Development and Outreach at the Clausing Group, a sustainable, very socially responsible commercial landscape operation here in Lexington and the Louisville area. You've got it tuned to 93.9 in the Green Waves radio program. Keep it tuned right here, and we'll be right back.
You know what really gets a party started? Indoor baseball. Yeah, just find a broom or a pool cue, and you can use, like, anything as a ball. Cans, bottles, shoes.
Hey, bro, toss me that avocado.
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Underage drinking and driving, the ultimate party foul. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, y'all. It's your girl, Shayna. Want to discuss topics within our community? Well, it's as simple as tuning into What Shayna Say every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on WLXU 93.9. Also, I want to hear from you, so please call in and voice your opinions or concerns. And if you can't call in, just snap me at @_ShaynaSays with an S. Don't forget, every Tuesday at 10 a.m., What Shayna Say.
And we're back. You've got it tuned to 93.9 WLXU Lexington Community Radio. And this is the Green Waves radio program, a project of Bluegrass Green Source. Before we get back into our conversation with Roscoe and Dan from the Clausing Group, I've got a couple of events to let you know about that are happening in and around the Lexington area. It's time for the run. The Shepherd's House has set the date for this year's Run for Recovery and is now accepting entries. This year's run is scheduled for July 23rd, that is tomorrow, 2016, at the historic Keeneland Race Course. The Run for Recovery is made up of a 5K run and a 1 mile fun walk, and it is pet friendly, so bring your four-legged running partners. The 5K begins at 8 a.m. and the phone walk begins at 8:15 a.m. Please be sure to register. You can use a form on the website at the Shepherd's House webpage, and the registration is $25. You can also register at the event. There will be many serious runners in the event. Several winners of the Bluegrass 10,000 have participated, as well as many of Lexington and Central Kentucky's running clubs. The Bluegrass Runners Club is a supporter. Many participants are local runners or walkers who just enjoy a leisurely run or the 1 mile fun walk. Many people bring their children and pets, so come on out, support a good cause, and see some serious running or just have a leisurely jog or walk. If you need more information, you can go to www.shepherdshouseinc.com/runforrecovery to get more information. On Saturday, August 6th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., join your friends from the NOLI CDC for a neighborhood litter cleanup. Volunteers can meet at the North Pole Community Garden at 11 a.m. to get supplies and check in. Volunteers will be cleaning up around North Limestone. All ages are welcome. There is no need to sign up. Folks should just show up, and please bring your friends and family. The North Pole Community Garden is located, if you're interested in this event, on the 900 block of North Limestone. Are you looking for some outdoor fun that is also free and kid-friendly? If so, head on down to the Arboretum for a new installation of the Story Walk, which began on July 1st and runs through the end of the month. This is a program in partnership with the Lexington Public Library and the Jessamine County Public Library. A Story Walk is a series of displays that complete a children's story as you follow them. If you do the Story Walk and complete a survey at the end, or comment and check in on the Arboretum's Facebook Story Walk event page, you can earn points and be entered to win raffle prizes. One family prize will be awarded in July. The story walk begins outside the Dorotha Smith Oates Visitor Center, goes through the home demonstration garden, and ends at the Kentucky Children's Garden. And again, the story walk is going on now through the end of July, so please be sure to check that out. And now let's get back into our conversation with Roscoe Clausing and Dan Stever, both from the Clausing Group. Before we went into break, we were talking about sustainability and sort of it being bigger than just what people think of the environment. And one thing I would really like to commend you all on as a business is that I think you all walk the walk. You don't just talk the talk. You all do 5% for the community, so you give back 5% of your profits to the communities that you are located in. You've done some really cool green upgrades to your headquarters, and you treat your employees very well. As you all have said, so much of your philosophy is designed around retaining and supporting the people that work for you. Can you talk just a little bit more about this rationale about sustainability, not just of natural resources, but of community and people as well?
Sure. let me start. I do want to tell you a little bit about the 5% for the community. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that during our break. And that's a neat little program. We were inspired by a company, Patagonia. They're a clothing outdoor manufacturer. They have a program that they founded called 1% for the community. And it's gotten so big there now. You can subscribe. You can join that as an organization yourself. And they take 1% of top line revenue and then pull all the money and put it towards different environmental causes. So we use that as inspiration for our program, which essentially is 5% of our profits. And we turn towards different nonprofits and groups within our community where we work and give back to them. And one way we thought we could do that best is by providing landscape services. Mm-hmm. It's something we do every day. We do it well. And you've probably heard of ways of measuring a nonprofit's performance and their effectiveness. One of the ways is to look at the amount of services or products that they provide to the community for every dollar of expenses.
Right.
And so we realized, you know, if somebody is currently paying, say, $5,000 a year for landscape maintenance services, and that organization is providing 10 times that value to the community because of the dollar spent on the expense, if we could eliminate that expense, then our donation of services could be made to go a lot further.
Right.
So our first recipient of 5% of the community was Living Arts and Science Center.
Awesome.
At the time,
yeah.
Marty Hinton was the director. Her son was working with us. And I thought, this is somebody who will actually trust me when I come to him and say, we're just going to do this for free in perpetuity, and you don't have to worry about us showing up.
Right? It's funny to think about nonprofits turning away or being even leery of receiving something like
well,
that.
Well, I can appreciate it. It would stink if somebody said they'll take care of this for you, and then they don't show up one week to cut the grass or prune the trees.
Right. Absolutely. In terms of incorporating sustainability into landscape maintenance, how many of your clients are coming to you with that in mind or with some sort of framework for understanding the importance of that? And how much of your job is really how much education of the client do you have to do? I imagine it varies. I imagine it's a scale, and some folks just don't even care. They just want the grass to look nice and the trees to look nice. But
yeah, ultimately, it always still comes down to price.
Right.
So no matter how interested someone is in going a sustainable route, if sustainability itself, using these new sustainable practices, is more expensive than conventional, traditional landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
Chemicals are easy. Chemicals are cheap.
Right.
And you don't have to be highly educated to be able to apply them. It's
right.
A very simple formula. You got this problem, you put down this chemical, and you get this result.
Right.
Sustainable practices generally cost about 30% more when you're looking at just the materials.
Right.
So it's hard to be competitive on that when your customer's just looking at the bottom line.
Right.
Now, we do have customers that are looking for that, but most of the time, they don't actually know what they're looking for.
Mm.
landscaping in general, although we're called the green industry, you know, I mentioned this earlier, just because you see a tree doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best choice. And so being able to provide these services for people that they might not even know that they need, like with traditional turf programs, there's a lot of water pollution, air pollution, carcinogens that are used. That was one of the first things we looked at. And we have what we call naturally better products. They're not all organic. You can't really do that and be competitive. But we took the things that we thought were big. So we've removed all carcinogens from our turf program. And we've changed the type of fertilizer that we use. Nitrogen, if it volatilizes into the air, is actually 300 times more of a greenhouse agent than CO2 is.
Wow.
So nitrogen,
I've never even heard that. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'll just say that again. Nitrogen can be 300 times more reactive in the atmosphere than CO2 as far as a greenhouse gas.
Wow.
So we've changed the type of fertilizer we use. Now, these are things that clients just say, I want to be green. Right. They don't know these things,
right.
And so we just have to tell them, you know, we got it covered.
Right.
It's too technical for a lot of them. They just want to have the warm fuzzies, know that it's happening, without really understanding how we achieve it.
And so you guys, so that speaks to, you guys have built up a certain level of trust and reputation, then, that if I come to you and I say, I'm really interested in my business facility being green, I trust you guys are going to handle that. And so I don't, maybe it's less about educating me and more just me understanding that if I'm working with you, then I'm going to increase my green footprint and reduce my, I don't know what the opposite of green footprint is, but
yeah, it's your carbon footprint.
There you go.
The education part is huge, and we do a lot, in regards to education for our clientele, for the general population, and also for our employees, because each audience receives a different level of education, and it goes to the depth that they want to understand.
Right.
If we have a client that wants to understand in depth what we do, we're happy to explain it. But most of them just want to know that it's being taken care of.
That's great. Yeah. You mentioned this, Dan. We often hear chatter that being green translates into paying more money and or being less profitable if you're a business. And I think that's in my personal feeling is that's increasingly becoming untrue, because a lot of the old ways of doing things, we're realizing that there are external costs, other costs associated with those, or like if we're talking about electricity, power provision rates are going up anyway. And so things like, if we're talking about energy, doing renewable energy or energy efficiency start to pay for themselves. And I'm curious, from a landscaping perspective, how do you all balance the cost benefit for the clients that you work with? How do you explain that? How do you, and is it easier to, so there's two questions here. Is it easier to come in with somebody who's got an established facility, or is it easier to set up sustainable practices if you're sort of doing it from scratch and make it in terms of a cost analysis?
We actually went on a pretty interesting journey to arrive at the place where we are now. Initially, when we started looking at sustainable practices in landscape management, in landscape design, installation, we kind of viewed it as a very idealistic thing, and that maybe a customer would come to us and say, as an example, I want a strictly organic lawn care program. So naturally, that is a more expensive program right now because there's less demand in the market for those kinds of services than a straight synthetic program. What we realized after a couple of years of developing programs like this is that people aren't always willing to pay that premium. And the number of people relative to the number of folks who are using traditional synthetic products is so small that there's actually greater opportunity to make incremental change over time by doing things like looking at a traditional lawn care program and simply replacing one of the herbicides with a less corrosive product.
Right.
So as an example, we eliminated 2,4-D from our lawn care program. A small step, but when you take into account that we're managing millions of square feet of turf across central Kentucky, simply deciding to make this one choice has a significant impact, far greater than if One customer said, I want a strictly organic lawn care program, and everybody else gets the standard synthetic product.
So it gets back to that sort of economy of scale in terms of impact, right? So if that's a really interesting way, how long did it take you guys to get to that realization, to that understanding?
It was around 2 years.
Wow.
That's awesome. Yeah. And we're slow. We're slow, Chris.
That's okay.
And so all of our clients receive these more sustainable services. It's just not one person that asks for it. Everybody gets it.
Right.
So
there's a great, embarrassingly, I'm going to go back to Patagonia again. Right. There's a great interview with the CEO and founder. And he says this. Most of our customers, well, he says, look, there are people that buy our products because they believe in my company's values. They believe in what we're trying to do for the environment. They're carrying the flag right alongside of me. But 95% of them, they like the color of our shirts. They like the logo that's on the shorts, whatever it may be. Right. And if I want to implement and encourage real change in this world, I've got to do the right thing for everyone, because the market is never going to make it easy to do what's right for the environment first.
That's such an interesting, I feel like we could do a whole show on that idea.
Invite us back.
Right, absolutely. We're going to take a really quick break, folks. You've got it at 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio. We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversation today with Roscoe Clausing and Dan Stieber, both of the Clausing Group, commercial landscapers doing really well by the environment and the community here in Lexington. So stick with us.
A portion of Lexington Community Radio's programming is brought to you by KET, which continues its in-depth primary election coverage with Kentucky Tonight programs featuring candidates in contested 2016 primary races for U.S. House and Senate seats. More info at KET.org.
And we're back. You've got it at 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio. This is the Green Waves radio program, a project of Bluegrass Green Source. We're jumping right back into our conversation today with Roscoe Clausing and Dan Stieber, both with the Clausing Group. We were just talking about sort of the economics of sustainability and how to increase change that benefits both the client, but also the community, as well as the business that it's implementing the change. So for a client that comes to you guys who has not been maintaining their landscape in a sustainable manner, what is sort of the low-hanging fruit that someone could implement, and what is the easiest thing to do to achieve sustainability?
Well, for starters, I want to say that even though we do all business-to-business work, all this stuff applies to anyone,
right?
Homeowner, office, it doesn't matter. It really first starts with making a choice. We gave that example earlier of the oak tree versus the ginkgo, and simply being informed, making a choice about the right type of plant selection is a big deal. You probably see the city of Lexington. They're doing a lot of work right now with public education. You've probably received flyers about leaving your lawn clippings on your lawn. Stop bagging. Leaves are an incredible source of nitrogen for your lawn. And again, it's just a matter of choosing to mulch those back into the soil instead of blowing them off every fall. There's a big change going on right now in Lexington with a focus on improved water quality and stormwater management. And that comes down to the homeowner, the business owner, simply deciding I'm not going to blow my debris into the street. Right. Or if I choose to fertilize my lawn and some of those fertilizer granules end up laying on the sidewalk, we're going to take the time to blow or sweep them back onto the turf. So there's a lot of really simple things you can do. You know, plant a tree. Our urban tree canopy is in rapid decline. The city has done a great job so far of starting a new initiative to improve the urban tree canopy, but we need help from everybody. We need to plant a tree. When we're looking at shrubs, perennial plantings, put something in that supports a pollinator. Those are some of the simplest things that can be done. And, you know, anybody could go out this tomorrow morning and get this stuff done before lunch.
Right. So you're talking about some of the things, Roscoe, that are going on in Lexington. Let's step back and just look at the bigger picture about what's happening in our community. As you guys are people that think about urban design and land use probably more than the average person does, what do you see as the biggest challenges that we have as a community? But more importantly, what are the bigger opportunities? How are we doing as a community on these issues?
Well, I'd like to start off by just saying that Lexington has a lot of concerned and active citizens. So although there's a lot to do, there's a lot of people out there that are actively seeking improvement.
Right.
You know, and one of the big things that we're facing right now with the Emerald Ash Borer is the loss of our ash trees, which across Kentucky is about 30% of all trees.
Wow.
So as they die, which, excuse me, they all will, we have a lot of trees to replace. And so one estimate is about 60,000 trees a year need to be planted just in the Lexington area to simply maintain the tree canopy that we currently have.
60,000 a year?
Yes.
In Lexington alone. And did I read on one of your all's blog posts about our tree canopy is what, like 40 to 45%? Is that right?
That's what we should have is the Davy Tree Canopy Study, which studied the urban tree canopy, we're about 24% coverage right now, if I'm remembering correctly, and they recommend 35 to 45% coverage. So we're not where we need to be, but we're in a good place. We've actually increased in the last 20 years our tree canopy coverage, but there's more to do. There's always more to do.
Dan's spot on. There's a real groundswell of change that we believe is going on right now. So I think that things are certainly heading in the right direction.
Right.
For me, one of the great ironies of the city of Lexington is that we have a world-renowned landscape. It's what the world celebrates about Central Kentucky.
Right.
And unfortunately, we mostly experience that outside of the city of Lexington on the beautiful horse farms, right, in the agricultural lands. And what we see as one of the biggest opportunities is bringing that into the city.
Mm-hmm.
Stop saying or suggesting that nature has to exist outside of the urban service, right, boundary. And by the way, you can turn to a lot of our neighboring states and see that done very well.
Yeah.
I'm sure many people have made that trip this summer to the East Coast to spend some time at the beach with their family. And don't you love when you drive down the interstate and there's enormous patches of wildflower plantings? Or maybe it's some interchange where you get off the interstate to go to a highway. It's heavily landscaped. It's little things like that.
Right.
Have you thought as you drive around New Circle Road about just how much acreage is there,
yeah,
that's just being mowed?
Yeah.
And that's it. What about all our other corridors? What about our streams, our park systems? And again, what's really exciting right now is that we're seeing that change.
Yeah, it's been it feels like, you know, I grew up here and it feels like I can remember when heading out Tate's Creek, there was nothing past. I mean, I remember when the Krogers went in, I remember that development happening. There was nothing past Man-O-War except for farmland. I mean, there was a time in our lives where that nature was actually a lot closer to the urban core,
right,
of Lexington. And I think as our generation has gotten older and as our parents have seen this change happen in this community, people are becoming more aware of not necessarily loss, but that there's a potential to lose sort of the thing that has made Lexington a special place.
Yes, and that corridor in particular is a good one to note, because we can go back 10 years and you may recall that there were no trees planted in that enormous median that runs,
right,
from essentially Cooper Drive all the way out to New Circle Road.
Right.
And now, because of some initiative, because of some forward thinking, there are hundreds of enormous shade trees that hopefully will give that corridor the same feel as say coming down Richmond Road.
That's awesome. In terms of moving the needle in a positive direction, sort of keeping that momentum that we have that you guys have noted here with regards to land use sustainability and development, it seems to me that we have to have a bigger conversation. Like, there are a core group of folks who are really engaged and know about these changes, know about like the tree board that I think, Dan, you're on the tree board and the tree canopy board. Yes. But I think the conversation needs to be a lot bigger with actors, both public and private. What do you all think it's going to take to build that conversation in this community, and what excites you all about possibilities? I mean, you guys must see things like Roscoe, you were talking about just the acres of mowed land outside New Circle, and that's something that you see that probably a lot of folks don't see. What is it that you guys that really excites you all about possibilities here in Lexington?
Well, there's a couple of organizations, LEED and SITES. Both are national programs, and LEED focuses on sustainable buildings, SITES focuses on sustainable landscapes. And they are actually federally mandated that all new federal buildings are built to these standards.
Wow.
And we need to expand those standards. Nobody voluntarily adopts these standards. So a little bit of enforcement, just like with the consent decree. Mm-hmm. You know, we have that problem with our stormwater system overflowing into our sanitary system, right, and end up with human waste where it doesn't belong. So we ended up with a consent decree. And there's grants out there for people to be able to improve the water retention on their own property. That's a big thing. Just keep water from leaving your property. Right. Everything is always built to keep water away. Build a rain garden. Yeah. Build a bioswale. Hold it on your property.
Put in a rain barrel on your...
yeah. Look at the Davy Tree Study, where they look at the urban tree canopy. You can Google it and find it. It's available for the public to take a look at. You can actually look at your own property, and it will tell you how many trees to plant, how many shrubs to plant to help reach the goals that we're looking for in our community. Mm. Really, also, it's a generational struggle. You know, if you look at where we were back in the 1970s with waterways catching on fire, right? We're far, far away from that now.
Right.
So we've come a long way, and it's important to recognize how far we've come, because those of us that see the problems that need to be overcome, they can seem insurmountable.
Right.
And but we have to realize we've come a long way, and we can achieve these goals that we still need to hit.
Right. And as you guys are saying, like, it just... as more people start to take notice and take these actions, then we can really start to see huge impacts, almost that ripple effect of that happening in our community. I'd really like to thank you guys for coming into the studio today, but before we leave, how can folks get a hold of you? How can they interact with Clausing Group?
We got a lot of great information on our website. We blog every week, clausinggroup.com. Go ahead and subscribe.
I just subscribed to the newsletter this week, and I've already gotten a couple of great blog posts that you guys have put out. It's really, really awesome. Thank you, Roscoe. Thank you, Dan, for being in the studio today. We really appreciate having you guys in here.
Thank you.
We're obviously going to need to have you guys back in the studio at some point in the future. Thanks again, guys. If you're just now tuning in, or if you haven't been listening, this is 93.9 WLXU Lexington Community Radio, and this has been the Green Waves radio program. Hope you guys have a great week, and we'll see you next Friday.